from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, live in Charlotte from the Democratic National Convention. 4 years ago in Denver, Barack Obama made history, the first African-American nominated for the presidency of the United States. He also made a lot of promises that night at Denver's Mile High Stadium. He said it was time for us to change America. He spoke of hope and change. Nearly 4 years on, that optimism faces a tough reality check. The economy's in the tank. Healthcare reform barely survived the challenge. Jobs are gone. The president is called too cool, a nice guy, but his new mantra is forward. But to what and how? This hour on Point, hope and change and the Obama presidency now. You can join the conversation. Do you remember all the way back? We are not red states and blue states, but the United States. Where do you see Obama's hope and change standing now? Was it? Is it real? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now in Charlotte is Congressman Emanuel Cleaver of Missouri. He represents the 5th District, Kansas City. That was Harry Truman's district. He's chair of the Congressional Black Caucus. Welcome, Congressman Cleaver.
It's good to be with you.
Great to have you in the hall tonight. A lot of people bustling by us here. A lot of excitement on the floor. A lot of questions about where this campaign, this election is going to go. Also with us tonight from Chicago, Laura Washington, columnist at the Chicago Sun-Times. Laura, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be here, Tom.
Listen, we are here in Charlotte, but let's just put our ear back. Here's a little tape from your town, Laura. This was election night 2008. Just for a feeling of what that was like, the expectations. President Obama telling a throng of emotional supporters in Grant Park there that his victory was the answer for those who doubt that America is the place where all things are possible.
It's the answer that led those who've been told for so long by so many to be cynical and fearful and doubtful about what we can achieve, to put their hands on the arc of history and bend it once more toward the hope of a better day. It's been a long time coming, but tonight, because of what we did on this day, in this election, at this defining moment, change has come to America.
And did people feel it? You bet they did. Felicia Kennedy, a teacher from Newark, New Jersey, spoke to the New Jersey Star-Ledger right after President Obama's victory in November 08. She wept as she described her feelings.
I didn't believe it. And I'm so emotional right now. I just feel like one of my family members have accomplished this. And I'm just overjoyed. And I'm so glad to be here in the United States around this time, just to celebrate Barack's victory and then just to celebrate the change that's going to come because he's president.
The change that's going to come because he's president. Congressman Cleaver, here we sit tonight. He's back for another round. It has been a tough 4 years. There have been victories. There have been a lot of defeats. And what about that bending the arc of history, that high, high bar of hope and change that was set? How do you look at that now, Congressman?
Well, I think it was quite eloquent for the president to particularly talk about hope. But it is important for me to say, because I was the first African-American mayor of Kansas City, Missouri.
Mm-hmm, 1991.
1991. And so there is inflated expectation. And I think people that night looked at the election, and in their mind's eye, they saw a new America that would be transformed overnight. And I think the expectation level could never have been reached. It was celestial, and so it has been a tough 4 years, and make no mistake about it. And hopefully, the next 4 years will be a little better. But no, we have not seen the dramatic change that I think the president wanted and what most Americans wanted. They voted for him. But there's still hope. We didn't get the change we wanted quickly, but there's still the hope.
Expectations so high they were nearly celestial, but those didn't come out of nowhere. I mean, here, Laura Washington, listen with us for a second. The president, here he was on Super Tuesday back in 08. Then Senator Barack Obama talking with an enthusiastic crowd again, Laura, in your town, Chicago.
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for. We We are the change that we seek.
Laura Washington, you're in Chicago. How about it? Celestial expectations? Can we look back now and say, well, people had inflated expectations. It was too much. They shouldn't have had such expectations. He was a candidate who knew how to get right into the heart of people and raise those expectations. Did he not, Laura?
Well, and of course, that was because he absolutely was. That was, of course, because of who he was. As you point out in your introduction, he was like no candidate before him. So he was the personification of change like we've never seen before. So it was natural that the bar would be set very high. But I think he might and his people might argue that there has been change. There's been change simply in the fact that we have a black man in the White House for the first time, that we have a black first family that has changed the image and in many ways told the story and brought African-Americans into the American ethos in a way that they've never been before. You could talk about our image overseas, which was something that was very troubling at the time he was elected. And I think his image overseas, ironically, in many ways, is better than his image here in the United States. And, you know, he might argue that health reform, like it or not, was a massive, incredible change that took, you know, took almost 40 years to bring about. And then he took the responsibility for that. So, you know, in many ways, he has brought about the change. The expectation, as the congressman pointed out, is indeed celestial and could never have been met by any politician.
But Americans were sick and tired of the polarization. And here he was all the way from 2004, Congressman Cleaver, saying we are not red states and blue states. We are the United States of America. And that gulf only seems to have widened. Maybe I'm wrong, but you're in Congress. How's it feel to you?
No, we have pathological partisanship at a level that most of the veterans say has never been this high. We can't have a civil discussion in Washington on whether or not we would like rainfall or sunshine. There is vitriol in every discussion, and I think if the public made underestimations about what was going on, I think the president also probably underestimated the resistance that he would get. I think things were already moving toward a much greater polarization in this country, political polarization. And I think his election brought on some of that polarization, some additional polarization. But
Other great presidents have had to deal with polarization. FDR had to deal with it. Harry Truman had to deal with it.
Absolutely.
LBJ
Absolutely.
Had to deal with it, and he went and he put in the elbow grease on Capitol Hill. Barack Obama, a lot of supporters thought, you know, had some kind of magic personality, and I mean that with respect because
sure.
he was magic
on the
dais.
Yes.
Why didn't it work, or has it not worked? What do you say?
No, it hasn't worked, and I don't think any of us ought to pretend that it works. I'm there on a day-to-day basis,
yeah.
and I can tell you it hasn't worked. It's gotten worse. And there are a number of factors. First and foremost, I think that we got to, and I don't like doing it either, but we got to understand that color in this country still matters. It does not matter like it used to, or President Obama would never have been elected president. I never would have been elected mayor in a overwhelmingly mm-hmm. non-black city.
Mm-hmm.
But it still matters to a small, very, very vocal group. Very active group.
You're saying he wasn't able to bridge the gap on partisanship because he is a black president?
I'm saying that because he was a black president, I think there was some resistance that he received that another president would not have received. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying because he was a black president, everything went to mm-hmm. pot. That's mm-hmm. that's not what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that I think we would be naive, foolishly naive, to suggest that there was nothing racial about the election and about what's going on over the last 4 years. But if I can say
mm-hmm.
quickly,
yes.
If you add the little tinge of race to it and then add the fact that I think, and I've been saying this for a while, when presidents come to office, they make a mortal mistake. George Bush made it, President Barack Obama made it, and it was this.
Mm.
When George Bush came in, he tried to do something to appeal to his base. He did two things. One, he did the tax cuts for the wealthy, and then he did he gave the seniors Medicare Part D without paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when he did that, when he raised the taxes, what did that do? It irritated the Democrats at about the highest level you could get. So Obama comes in and
cut the taxes there.
Obama comes in and then he does the thing that turns the Republicans out in rage, and that was Medicare.
Healthcare,
the Affordable Health Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is when presidents come in, they try to appeal to their base. They try to say, see, I'm going to do what I said. Mm-hmm. I'm the right one from you. And when they do that, it irritates the other side. And right off the top, the polarization begins.
And yet, if he didn't do that, Laura, his base would say, where's the change, buddy?
Yeah.
Right, well, that's the challenge of balance, the balancing challenge in politics. You know, his base was very irritated by his repeated attempts to reach out across party lines, and he did do that to the point where he was criticized roundly, particularly by the progressives in his party, who were saying these guys and women don't want to work with you, give it up. So he did, in fact, give it up eventually. But I think that what he had to do and what he's trying to do, I think, is find the balance, find reasonable thinking people who are willing to accept the fact that he hasn't done everything, he hasn't solved all the problems, but that he's working very hard and he's making progress.
Laura Washington in Chicago, please stand by. We'll put it to our listeners. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver with me here in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention. We're talking about hope and change and Barack Obama now. You can join us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. What do you think? I'm Tom Ashbrook in Charlotte. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point in Charlotte at the Democratic National Convention, and we are talking hope and change. And Barack Obama now, the highest hopes that accompanied President Obama into office and where they stand today. You can join the conversation. Did you swoon for Barack Obama, for hope and change? Where do your highest hopes stand now? Do you see the change you were looking for? Where has he nailed it? Where has he missed it? Where has he fulfilled the promise? Where has he failed? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. The president himself could sound pretty glum sometimes in the last 4 years. Here he was in the White House East Room July last year, gave a televised address to the nation, blaming both parties for the bitter budget battles.
They're fed up with a town where compromise has become a dirty word. They work all day long, many of them scraping by just to put food on the table. And when these Americans come home at night, bone-tired, and turn on the news, all they see is the same partisan three-ring circus here in Washington. They see leaders who can't seem to come together and do what it takes to make life just a little bit better for ordinary Americans. They're offended by that, and they should be.
Okay, but you were the president who was supposed to change that, came the critique. Even before then, plenty of Republicans snickering at hope and change. First in that line, February 2010, Sarah Palin attacking President Obama's rhetoric and record.
Now, a year later, I got to ask those supporters of all that, how's that hopey, changey stuff working out for you?
Oh, boy, she was enjoying that. But right now, in the campaign, Mitt Romney talks about it plenty. Here he was in Chillicothe, Ohio, August 14th, talking about President Obama's reelection campaign. Mitt Romney.
His was the campaign of hope and change. He was the candidate who was going to bring a new era to American politics. In 2008, candidate Obama said this, quote, if you don't have any fresh ideas, then you use stale tactics to scare voters. He also said this, if you don't have a record to run on, then you paint your opponent as someone people should run from. And then he said this, you make a big election about small things. That was candidate Obama describing the strategy that is now the heart of his campaign.
His was the campaign of hope and change, says challenger Mitt Romney now. Laura Washington joins us this hour, columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. Congressman Emanuel Cleaver is here with us in Charlotte, chairman of the Congressional Black Caucus. He was first black mayor of Kansas City, represents Missouri's 5th District, and is with us right here at Harry Truman's old district. With us as well right now in Charlotte, John Harwood, chief Washington correspondent for CNBC, writer for the New York Times. John, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Hope and change, here we are. It is 4 years later. Well, how does that look now?
Not very good. Most people in the country think the country's on the wrong track. The proportion who think so is somewhat smaller than it was in 2008, but still you've got over 60% of the people say we're not headed in the right direction. They are feeling gloomy about their economic prospects, not as gloomy as they were a year or two ago. So there are signs of improvement, but mostly American voters are in a bad mood.
This was a president who promised a kind of alchemy. He was so exciting to many Americans on the campaign trail. And I think the stated, unstated promise was, I'm going to take this aura, I'm going to take this power into the White House, and I am going to change the chemistry in Washington. And that hasn't happened. How much of that is on Barack Obama's hook, his responsibility?
You know, I don't think you can blame Obama for that. The two parties have been in a state of permanent war for some period of time now. The ideological divisions between the parties are greater than they've been in a long time. The things that bind the parties together are smaller. And so in that circumstance, any president is going to face intractable opposition from the other side without some signal from the voters that's very powerful. Now, there were two parts of President Obama in 2008. One was a conventional liberal Democrat who was running in a good year for Democrats on a set of more or less conventional Democratic priorities. Then you also had, by virtue of his persona, a mixed-race candidate, somebody who, by his person, bridged the sort of most fundamental divide in American history.
Mm-hmm.
So that created a promise about changing Washington, but that proved to be less robust than the ability to get his agenda through. So in the first 2 years, he got health care through, which Bill Clinton and Democrats for 50 years had not been able to do.
Yeah.
But the changing the structure of American polarization, too hard.
Emmanuel, he got it through, but Congressman Cleaver says maybe that was a bridge too far. Maybe that pushed too hard. Laura Washington in Chicago, you've known him for a long time. When he was coming into office, after that campaign, you must have seen it and been moved by it like everybody else, but you'd known him. Did you see a man who you thought could be the transformative presence in the White House that could somehow bridge the polarization, Laura?
Well, absolutely, because he was so idealistic, so he was a believer in community and a believer in people. As you know, he was a community organizer. That is where his roots come from. And of course, he was also naive, and many people in his position coming from his background would have been just as naive. He'd never really, he only spent a few years in Washington as a senator, and most of that time he was running for president. So he never really understood what John is describing, the lock hole that partisanship has in Washington and has had for many years. So I think he went in just really with all sincerity, but not being equipped to deal with, to politically navigate something which is probably not easy for any politician to navigate. And I think also the rap that Hillary Clinton laid on him during the primary was true, that he didn't have the experience. He had never managed essentially anything. He didn't know how to run anything. And that, I think that warning has sounded through the last 4 years.
Congressman Cleaver, was there some presumed capacity in this man who was so potent in his campaign that was off base? I mean, some inclination or disinclination to reach out and make things happen. Republicans were fiercely opposed to him, and on the record, Mitch McConnell and all the rest. But here's Olympia Snow, one of the most moderate senators. She's leaving from Maine now, but she's said on ABC News in March that when you come to grading President Obama on working with Republicans, she said she'd give him a close to failing grade on that point. She said that she hadn't had a face-to-face meeting with Barack Obama, President Obama, in nearly 2 years, and she would be one of his presumably most receptive Republicans, or would have been.
Well, what we have to acknowledge, we don't have to, but I think it would be important, is that the president got into the White House, and once he became involved in the affordable health care legislation, and things went down, and he was constantly meeting with the Republican leadership, not the rank and file. He was meeting with Mitch McConnell over on the Senate side, and eventually with Boehner on our side, on the House side. And he was so consumed with them because we were in crisis after crisis, it did not afford him the opportunity to do what Bill Clinton did, what even Ronald Reagan did, which is to go into the ranks and meet with people. Bill Clinton was a master at it. But Obama never had that opportunity to do that.
I mean, they just weren't open to it, even if he tried?
Well, I think he did try on a number of occasions. In fact, some of us were offended because we were such big supporters. Mm-hmm. On the first Super Bowl, when he was in the White House,
yeah.
he invited Republicans over to the White House to watch the Super Bowl,
yeah.
just to hang out.
But people say since then, John, you know, he golfs and his foursome doesn't include Republicans. They haven't gone out to Camp David. I don't know. I'm not in Washington. Harper's Liberal Magazine says he's heir to a habitual and sometimes crippling sense of constraint. Said what he likes best about the presidency is the emotional bubble. This man of reserve may be too cool for school to put in the elbow grease. What about that?
Well, some of that insularity is not partisan. He doesn't take Democratic members of Congress to play golf either. He takes his aides and people very close to him.
I mean, even if it's not partisan, it takes outreach. It takes backslapping, does it not, son?
Yes, but I wouldn't overrate that.
I mean,
I take the congressman's point about Bill Clinton. But Bill Clinton faced a wall of Republican opposition to his economic plan, got it passed on a partisan vote, did not get health care like President Obama did. So he had tremendous interpersonal skills, didn't always get him what he wanted, and he got whacked in the 1994 midterm just as badly as President Obama
yeah.
did in 2010.
Of course, then he went centrist. We've got a conservative voice to bring in here, but let's get a couple of callers first. Black Mountain, North Carolina. Tom is calling. Tom, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Tom. I think your guests are being somewhat hard on President Obama. He accomplished four major things in his first 3.5 years. First, he got health care reform passed,
yep.
the beginning bill anyway. Second, he got us out of Iraq. Third, he got a timetable for getting us out of Afghanistan that's going to stop the bleeding and stop the spending. And fourth, he ended Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Those are significant accomplishments. And the accomplishment of health care reform goes back to Teddy Roosevelt.
So give the man his due. Tom, let me take that right there and get one more. Give him his due on those four. You say Miami, Florida, Alexandra. Thanks, Tom. Alexandra, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Good evening. Well, I think Obama has a great opportunity to make a sales speech right now to everyone. He accomplished 29-month job growth. He saved the banks. He saved GM. He stopped foreclosures that they were kicking people out of their homes. He captured and killed Osama bin Laden. He did a great job with universal health care. He stopped a lot of Latin people from being deported, and now they have, you know, time to get their papers in order. And
yep.
all of these he accomplished despite all this Republican opposition that was completely just irrational. So I don't know what the Republicans are talking about, to be quite honest.
Alexandra, we'll pick it up right here, and I appreciate your call. Stephen Hayes is with us, senior writer at the Weekly Standard, author of Cheney, the Untold Story of America's Most Powerful and Controversial Vice President. Stephen Hayes, we open up the phones, and right there, a caller saying, come on, he's got a laundry list of what they see as successes. So looks like hope and change to them. How do you see it?
Look, I actually agree with the caller. I agree with Tom. I mean, I think you can point to President Obama and say that he has been one of the most consequential presidents that we've had in recent memory. Now, I think for conservatives, that's not a great thing, but the president did accomplish quite a bit in his first 2 years. The stimulus package, as you say, health care, those are huge accomplishments that will have lasting effects. And so if you're looking to judge President Obama on what he's done, I think he can defend hope and change. The difficulty, I think, for him and for Democrats more broadly is when you look at the effectiveness of those policies. I think the stimulus, the jury is, at the very best, the jury is still out on that. Certainly the public perception is that the stimulus did not work and didn't work as well as it intended to. If you go back and you use these projections that Republicans are fond of pointing to, you look at where we should be right now in unemployment in terms of the unemployment rate, it should be 5.6% with the stimulus having been passed, or 6% with the stimulus not having been passed, and here we are. Above 8%, I think that's where his difficulty comes in. Not defending himself or defending his record on the fact of the change, but on it, the effect of the change.
You know, he proposed a lot more than he got through, and we've got lots of listeners writing here saying, "Well, it's Republican obstructionism that put him in this situation. If he'd had a free hand, would have worked better."
But he did have a free hand
for a while,
for 2 years.
Yeah,
those are the years in every presidential term when the most consequential agenda items are pushed. He pushed his most consequential agenda items, the stimulus and health care. I think it's a tremendous long-term accomplishment for the president. The question is, what are the changes and what can he point to?
Well, we've got plenty going on here at the Democratic Convention in Charlotte. Eli in Wakefield, Rhode Island. Eli, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I agree with the comments made by the guest about the free hand, especially in the first 2 years. I think Obama's biggest error was focusing all the goodwill, all the good political will, and all the momentum he had on health care instead of reforming Wall Street. I think he would have had a much easier time because there was a lot more resentment to Wall Street, and he wouldn't have run into the Republican wall so quickly.
Reforming Wall Street? I mean, he got there's Dodd-Frank. Is that not good enough for you, Eli?
I think what was needed is a lot more. I don't think it was good enough.
Look at Wall Street. Look at the economy. Congressman, how about it? I mean, you suggested that he and George Bush, both went too far in a direction. Should he have looked more at the economy? Should he have been tougher on Wall Street instead?
Well, he was tougher on Wall Street. Actually, those bills were written in the House, but
yes.
In our committee, I'm on the Financial mm-hmm. Services Committee. But it's important to note that much of the resistance now is coming from people who are fighting because of what they consider to be an overregulated presidency. That everything is being regulated. So I think we went as far as we could go with Dodd-Frank. And even there, as with most legislation, we really need to revisit it to take out some of the unintended consequences. Look, the president doesn't prosecute. That's not one of the jobs the president has, is to go out and prosecute.
Well, he's got a Justice Department under him. He knows the head of it fairly well.
Yes, but and he's an attorney. But I think a lot of people are upset because nobody's been prosecuted. I don't feel really good about it because if you rob 7-Eleven, you go to jail. If you rob the nation, you go on vacation. And so I do think that many of us would be a little happier if that happened. But the truth of the matter is, the president is going to get it either way it goes. He signs Dodd-Frank into law, and then all of a sudden the banks, many of the CEOs and banks who supported him 4 years ago are now fighting him. Either way it goes, he's going to have a problem.
Stephen Hayes, part of the hope and change, hope for a lot of people was maybe contradictory internally here, but to bind up the wounds of the nation, to do something about this polarization. Now, some people say, look back at Mitch McConnell and more. Congressman Cleaver says maybe even on some racial basis in here that the GOP was not going to go with that no matter what. They were going to keep that wound wide open and try and drive it to back to power in the White House.
Well, look, I think you have a fairly simple but significant ideological divide. We're seeing this play out in the 2012 election. You have a convention that opened today by saying the government is the only thing that we all belong to. That's a very strong ideological
statement.
Here in
Charlotte today.
It is. It's a very strong embrace of what I would consider to be old school liberalism.
And quite far from what we heard in Tampa last
year. Indeed, quite far from what we heard in Tampa. The Republicans had the rise of the Tea Party from 2000, early 2009 to 2010. You've got basic ideological differences, and I think one of the, certainly everybody plays politics on all sides. We can acknowledge that. But I think one of the things that at least I'm hoping in the final 64 days or 63 days of this campaign is that we can have this debate. I like this debate. I like to have a debate where you have two very strong and different visions for where the country can go. I hope that we can have it on substance.
John, maybe the country wanted something they can't have. George Will, wrote a couple. You have to decide now, America. You can't wish for this but want that. Maybe people didn't want this terrible grinding tension and conflict, but they didn't agree on the direction to go in.
Voters, like everybody, hold contradictory opinions on multiple things, right? Mm-hmm. So there is no clear voice from the voters. There's an election result that gets interpreted by people in politics. On Steve's point about the ideological divide, yes, there is. It's part ideological and part partisan. Where I was surprised. I expected Obama to have more success going across party lines than he turned out to have had, which is almost none.
Mm-hmm.
When he proposed a stimulus, about which there wasn't a lot of ideological disagreement about the need for some stimulus.
About
the shape of it, what to do.
Yep.
He didn't get any Republican votes. That told you they weren't going to come together.
That tells you a lot right there. John Harwood, Stephen Hayes, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver, Laura Washington in Chicago, please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. We're talking about hope and change and Barack Obama. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Democratic National Convention about hope and change and Barack Obama now, the highest hopes that accompanied President Obama into office and where they stand today. You can join us. Overall, how do you see it? Has he delivered the hope, the change? If not, why not? Is it him? Is it Congress? Was it the wrong hope, the wrong change? Does change now mean Mitt? Was the dream naive? Or is it time to say, yeah, let's push it on further? Is it time to double down? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with some delegates right here in Charlotte at the convention. Here was a delegate, Eric Bauman from Los Angeles, reflecting on why he thinks President Obama has accomplished change.
The fact that we did not go over the fiscal cliff, the fact that today tens of thousands of people who couldn't get health insurance because they have pre-existing conditions can do so now, the fact that equal pay for equal work is now a legal requirement in America, the fact that we have two brilliant women on the Supreme Court that this president appointed, to me, I feel change has been happening and there's still a lot more to come.
There's hope and change from the delegates. Here's Delegate Andrea Katz from Englewood, New Jersey, says that Americans can't expect too much change from just one term.
We believed in change last time and hope for my generation and for the future, and change doesn't happen overnight. The president told us that, and he's moving us forward. So 2.0, here we go. We're doing it.
Delegates at the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. Stephen Hayes is with us for a few more minutes from the Weekly Standard. Laura Washington from the Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver, Kansas City, Missouri, and John Harwood of CNBC and the New York Times. Lots of response online. Jane says, I think he did the best he could, was able to, with the opposition the Republicans threw at him. I fault them for the slow progress he made. Babette says, a miserable failure. Bank bailouts, pathetic economy, no jobs. Obama's a complete dropout, more than just a huge letdown. A4 says, the hope component remains fairly intact. The change grade is much lower. Cullen in Portland, Maine. You're on the air, Cullen.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. I just wanted to say I'm a little bit embarrassed on behalf of the Democrats and appalled that your guests are there apologizing for the president. I mean, it was a great chance for my generation. I'm in my early 30s. To get out there and say, you know what, we want a progressive agenda in this country. And instead, you guys are sitting there telling me that, you know, oh, well, you know, if only we behaved a little bit better with the Republicans, we could have gotten more done. You know what? I want to see more.
Well, I mean, I don't know if anybody's saying that it would have been different in that way. And hope and change meant different things to different people. For you, it's bring on more progressive. Congressman Cleaver, are you apologizing for the president, to Cullen's point?
No, the caller must be listening to another show. Because I've been here since the beginning, and nobody has apologized. I mean, what we're trying to, what at least I'm trying to do, is to be candid and to also be unequivocal in my support of the president and the fact that I think he tried desperately to accomplish the goals. He ran into resistance with Republicans. I think it should have been anticipated. He did not anticipate the level of that resistance. And I dare anybody to prove me different. And I also believe that the hope, keeping, look, President Obama has not tried to do the presidency with a speedometer. I think that it's more important that he's been using a compass. He's not trying to get somewhere wrong fast, but rather making certain that he's going in the right direction. And there's no reason in the world for a patient who has been comatose and is now moving around and his eyelids fluttering, that's the wrong time to pull the plug. You know, that's the time to give the patient more attention. And that's what's happening to the economy, and I think that we have the person in office to do that. But let's not try to, I mean, we can't continue this inflated expectation because it's only going to create more problems in the second term.
Comatose, eyelids fluttering, that doesn't sound too great. I mean, Stephen Hayes, and the congressman talks about the level of resistance, and it has been great. I mean, some people look at this and they see a Republican Party that just said, you know, looking at the choice Americans are facing now, you paint it, they painted it last week. And there seems to be a little bit message, hey, if you vote for President Obama, we're not backing down in the next 4 years either. And that comatose patient's going to stay right there in that bed. There's almost a kind of, I don't know what you call that, but like gun to the head. Don't vote for this guy because he's going nowhere.
But look, I think this is what we have elections for, right? I mean, you have this big debate. You have these differing viewpoints, and you make your case. just to pick on something the congressman said and to go back to a point that John made a little bit earlier. You know, if you go back and you look at the way that the stimulus was put together, I would argue that the stimulus is a tremendously ideological document, and that the reason that there wasn't more Republican support for it, or any Republican support for it, was because of the way that it was put together. The president came in. He had laid out the sort of big picture, his big picture prescription for the economy in speeches in the final six weeks of the campaign. So he had laid out sort of the superstructure, but then came in and had congressional Democrats fill in all of the details, or many of the details. Those were not the kinds of things that congressional Republicans were likely to vote for from the beginning. And I don't think the president sought much of their input, and he certainly didn't use much of their input. It wasn't put together in such a way that it invited Republican support. So I think if you want to go back and be historically accurate about it, you have to acknowledge that the president started with what I believe was a step to the left in his creation and implementation of the stimulus.
John.
I see it somewhat differently. I think that, first of all, that there was a significant percentage of the stimulus which was in the form of direct payments to individuals, tax cuts.
Yep.
That the president thought would attract some Republican support. Secondly, I think if the president had an expectation from his initial consultations of more Republican support, the stimulus would have been designed differently. It was a stimulus designed to pass a Democratic House when he had concluded he wasn't going to get Republican votes.
You think he was right about that?
That he wasn't going to get Republican votes?
Anyway.
I suspect that he would not, but I don't know. The congressman would be a lot better authority on that than me.
Well, the president initially did seek Republican support for the stimulus package. And I actually was not happy with the president because I thought we needed a $1 trillion stimulus package, but I was willing to compromise. Mm-hmm. And I think if the president had the opportunity to rethink it today, he would say the resistance was not going to be any greater if I'd gone to $1 trillion. I think it sounded bad to him, so it didn't go that high. I think Tom Friedman was right, should have been $1 trillion. Republicans did. I do agree that ideological differences were in the bill, but it was only when it came to us, to the House. And that's when we started doing the energy stuff. And there's a climate change is not science in Washington. It's ideology. And so when you start talking about ideology and how to respond to this ideology.
Grand Canyon in a hurry.
Yes.
Laura Washington, you're listening in Chicago. Mm-hmm. How do you see the president then and through his first term? I'm too ideological or at some point too naive in trying to reach out to the GOP?
I would lean more naive rather than ideological. But I think that he has an opportunity here because partly because of the change hope mantra and his image is this transformative figure. People, I think, still believe in him. Obviously, his poll ratings in terms of popularity are very high, especially compared to Mitt Romney. People are invested in him. Folks bought into hope and change, and maybe they have given up on the change, but they haven't been given up on the hope. And I think that may save him if he can lay out all of the accomplishments that you've heard from the callers and our guests tick off today, and lay that out as an agenda for a second term, and say, look, you know, I inherited a mess. Look, I had a lot of obstacles going forward, but I've laid the groundwork for something that can really matter in the second term. I think that may be enough to get him through.
Here he was, the president, speaking, this was in July, on CBS This Morning with Charlie Rose, reflecting on what the biggest mistake during his first years as president.
The mistake of my first couple of years was thinking that this job was just about getting the policy right. And that's important. But you know, the nature of this office is also to tell a story to the American people that gives them a sense of unity and purpose and optimism, especially during tough times.
Stephen Hayes, I've just got you for another minute. If the president is reelected and he's seeming in any number of statements to say, you know, I've got to reach directly to the people, in a way past Congress. Do you see that as a path to success for his agenda, for the hopes of change that he raised?
I don't. And I think we're hearing, in some ways, conflicting things from the president, because you remember in the interview that he gave to the Associated Press the day before, a couple days before the Republican Party convention began, he said that he thought that he would begin a second term reaching out to Congress, reaching out to Republicans, and would be able to find areas of compromise. I think talking to Republicans in Tampa, they're very eager to hear in specifics where those areas of compromise are. And John and I had an exchange about this on Twitter. I think Republicans are dubious that the president will reach out to them in any kind of a meaningful way and would seek their input on these things.
Stephen Hayes, senior writer at the Weekly Standard. Great to have you here in
Thanks
Charlotte.
For having
Thanks
me,
for
Tom.
Joining us. What about it, John? If he does it, if these Democrats who are so excited here in Charlotte, Republicans excited last week, both have reason to be excited. It's a dead heat. Both have reason to fear. It's a dead heat. Nobody knows how this is going to go. If Obama wins it, how do you see him changing, governing differently? Can he reach over Congress, go to the people, and somehow make this happen? Where does hope and change go in a second term, if that's what it is?
If he's reelected, I would expect hope and change to go straight to the office of Speaker Boehner and resume the grand bargain negotiations that faltered in the summer of 2011. I think that Alan Simpson, the former senator, Sergeant Simpson Bowles, told me a while ago, if Obama's reelected, there will be a brief window of a few months in early 2013 when Republicans, having tried to defeat this guy for 4 years, having failed, may be more open to a compromise than they were in 2011 when that grand bargain fell apart. I don't think you can really go around Congress. I think, to some degree, the president is sort of finding something to say about what went wrong. I'm sympathetic to those on his communications staff who say, when unemployment is 10% or 9% or 8%, there's no communication strategy that works very effectively.
Congressman Cleaver, if he gets a second term, and everybody here at this convention hopes he does, what's the strategy to reach for those aspirations that a lot of Americans responded to 4 years ago?
I agree with John and Senator Alan Simpson. I've been telling people that my hope, and here's that word hope jumping up again, and I believe it is also the hope of the president, that if he is in fact reelected, that the Republicans in the House, John Boehner, can convince the Tea Party Republicans that they cannot allow another 4 years to go by without having some progress for the American people.
You think they can persuade them of that?
That's going to be a really tough job. But I hope that Boehner pushes very hard on this, because we can't afford to go another 4 years. Even if they just say, let's work with the guy for 2 years, and then they get ready to position somebody for the presidential election. They're not going to do 4 years. There's no matter. I can tell you right here, and you can put it in concrete.
Right.
But there is a window, and I hope it's 2 years, but it's not going to be open long. Now, I think the president realizes that and recognizes it, and is going to go straight to that window.
Maybe there's a window. Maybe it's back to the trenches. I don't know.
Boehner believes that some of those Tea Party members have been chastened by the experience of having served the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And if Republicans lose seats again, they're going to have all the more incentive to do things slightly differently.
Slightly. Akeem in Weddington, North Carolina, where we are sitting in your state right now. Akeem, what do you think?
Hi, Tom. I think Obama overestimated the power the people gave to him. Open change and winning the election does not include you rubbing it on your opponent's face. That's part of the experience is lacking. When you tell your opponent, when they make a suggestion and you say, I want you lose, nobody's going to want to work with you. I think you forget that aspect. Plus, he has his agenda before he become president. And when the calamity came towards the end of the campaign and the economic disaster and whatever,
yeah,
he ought to have scaled back. What his personal agenda or his agenda for the country will be to focus on the job at hand, which is like saving the country, creating jobs. Then on the second time, he can still now, after getting the trust of the Republican, then you can now implement all this Obamacare.
Maybe you're right, Akeem, but I think it depends in part what you mean by saving the country. And he had supporters who had very clear ideas about that. I appreciate your call. One more, Polly in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Polly, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. You had talked earlier about wanting to know if somebody who swooned for Obama 4 years ago, how they were feeling now.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people. I felt incredibly strongly about the hope and change, and I not only feel as strong or stronger now, but that is even in light of the fact that I've become unemployed, and I'm a college-educated nonprofit executive who has been looking for work for a year.
Ouch.
I I don't believe that, I'm not an economist, but I don't believe that had a Republican been in office, I would have had a better chance at getting a job right now. I just believe that the values, his aspirations, they haven't changed, and they are as deeply important to me as they were 4 years ago, regardless of whether the fact I have a job or not.
Polly, you are truly in his corner, and we hear it loud and clear. He wants to reach out to you. Here he was in Des Moines, Iowa, a couple of months ago, talking with supporters there about, hope and change again.
So if people ask you what this campaign is about, you tell them, yes, it's still about hope. It is still about change. It's still about ordinary folks who believe that in the face of great odds, we can make a difference in the life of this country. Don't let them tell you different.
President Obama in May, Laura Washington, you know this man, his personality. If he wins that second term, what attitude, what posture when it comes to those high ideals that so kindled up support 4 years ago and more, what do you expect him to bring into the White House as an attitude in a second term, if it comes? Laura?
In his second term, he'll feel vindicated that what he tried to do in the first term did work and did make a difference. That line from the clip you just played, in the face of great odds, I think his message to his base and to the swing voters is, you know, I did the best under incredible pressure, and I'm going to come back and do it again for you. The guy doesn't quit, so I think that he will be re-energized. And he'll feel vindicated if he were able to pull this out.
Does he say, we won, you lost again, and go to his base for his agenda? Or does he try to reach out?
I don't think so. I think he is truly the bipartisan, reach across the aisle person that he was at the beginning, and he has continued to be. And I think he's going to continue to do that.
Well, that's the promise and the tension right there in this man who is president 4 years after that Mile High Stadium euphoria. We'll hear directly from him on Thursday night. I'm very grateful to all of our guests with us this evening. Stephen Hayes with the Weekly Standard. Thanks. Laura Washington, columnist with the Chicago Sun-Times, joining us from Chicago. Laura, thank you so much for being with us and Charlotte.
It's a pleasure.
And Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver represents Missouri's 5th District, Kansas City, Harry Truman's old district. Congressman Cleaver, wonderful to have you with us.
Good
Thanks so much
here.
For your
Thank
time
you.
And thoughts. John Harwood with CNBC and the New York Times, as always. Great to have you right here. Thanks, John.
Love to talk.
Listeners, we're in Charlotte all week long. Join us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.